the ups, the downs, and all the in-between. What it takes to become next on scene. Are you next? Follow us at Next on Scene.
Welcome back, everybody, to Next on Scene. It's another week and another awesome day for a podcast with another inspiring entrepreneur up and coming to know about. So who is next to know about today? Becoming Next on Scene is Meredith Jacobson. So excited to have her on. She has started an incredible business called Boston Boosters, connecting brands, influencers, partnerships for, you know, long-term growth. And she had a career in content and influencer marketing for a really long time. And she founded Boston Boosters to simplify and expedite the partnership process for brands, publishers, vendors, and content creators. They first align your goals, then facilitate mutually beneficial relationships to help you and your partners achieve them. So excited to interview Meredith today. And now that influencer marketing continues to soar on the market, it is just really, really important, as we even chatted with Chelsea and Rob last week, that it is something you should consider and put into your marketing plan. So I have to say that social media itself, the opportunities that it gives people and connects people and does so much more, me, you know, speaking from building a business off of social media, the benefits are just endless. So if there are any tips today that I can give for my weekly Motivation Monday, it is really to start, if you haven't yet, really, really start maximizing on your social media platforms and really connect with influencers. Influencers are just as valuable, depending on who you find, as editors of magazines and publications and radio shows. You know, they are all new forms of media outlets in the 21st century. So excited to have Meredith on today. Can't wait for her to share her insights, how she got started, some fun facts about her, and we will have her on shortly. So stay tuned for the amazing Meredith Jacobson. All right, everybody, I officially have the amazing Meredith Jacobson on the line, the founder of Boston Boosters. Hi, Meredith, how are you today?
Hey, Jackie, I'm great.
So excited to have you, and what a ball of light you are, doing so much things in the marketing, influencer. I think you do a little bit of everything. We can totally, you know, deep dive into that. But tell us first, being in this new world of media and marketing, like, how did you fall into this influencer world?
For sure. So I grew up in the Boston area, and I actually moved out to LA when I graduated from college and wanted to work in entertainment. And while I was out there, it was really the moment when things were starting to escalate in the influencer space. And so I had a friend who was a couple years younger who came out of college just like super gung-ho about it. And she had all these visions for what it could be in the future. And I remember sitting and talking to her and just like thinking, these people are YouTube stars and they have all these views and you think that this is a way of making money? And it was kind of a weird moment, but then I ended up interviewing for an opportunity at her company. She persuaded me, and it completely changed my life. I just got started at one of the biggest YouTube talent management companies, and I got to spend a lot of time with creators and help manage their brand deals, and then start to get into some of the sales side, and that's really when my career escalated.
So awesome. Now, what I really find interesting about you is you really started more in the YouTube sector. So can you break down for our audience a little bit, really the benefits of YouTube?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing with YouTube and with working with YouTube creators is that they, you know, first of all, they have an extremely engaged and loyal audience, and they've all kind of created an identity and a niche for themselves that they're known for. And the way that they bring value to brands is they have the ability to like really spend time messaging why a consumer should care about a brand or why they should use a product or, you know, like how a product even works. I mean, there's huge influencers that are in the beauty space and in the tech space that can go into levels of detail, you know, that are just unheard of in the past, and you have a super engaged viewership. And those are just a couple examples. It really you find that there's something for everybody out there.
Totally. Thank you for breaking that down. Cause even when you and I have chatted, even outside of the show, we just talk about how valuable video is more than anything now. So It's really interesting. Cool. All right. So tell us a little bit about Boston Boosters. Tell us how you got started, what inspired the name. Break it down for our audience who has not heard of you yet.
For sure. So I, as I kind of mentioned, I started out in LA and then I transitioned to New York for a while. And I spent a lot of time really on the new business side, learning what clients are looking for, pitching influencer campaigns, and working with top talent. And then I actually spent a year when I moved back up to Boston working on the receiving end of all these proposals, all these solutions. And I realized that so much of the space has just exploded with companies that are offering very similar things. And really what it comes down to when you're a brand or when you're someone who's looking to activate in the space is you kind of just, you kind of can only look at so many proposals, you right. know? And so I decided to launch Boston Boosters kind of using the context of my experience and, you know, like what I know is reasonable in this world just by like talking to creators and having relationships with them and being on both sides and seeing the differences in what these companies offer. And so I kind of partnered with some of the solutions that I find really valuable and really niche. And then I also work as a consultant to help brands prepare themselves both with their own content strategy and also like with just the way they're thinking about what an influencer or content strategy will bring to their business. You know, I think a lot of the struggle on both sides sometimes is just not understanding what the return's going to be and having like a lack of understanding of how the dollars are going to be spent and how to maximize the value out of a campaign.
Right. And I actually want to chime in on like personal experience that we did together, which I thought was really interesting. So it's like, I almost want you to talk about how important it is to really know who your audience is. Can you elaborate a little bit mm-hmm. more on like the importance of learning about your audience?
Mm-hmm. Totally. So I think that A lot of influencers, they really have a deep understanding of their audience in a way that, you know, brands might not always have because they're constantly engaging and constantly interacting and sharing stories with these audience members. And they see, you know, they're obsessed with their analytics, so they can tell what videos resonate and what, even like to the minute or the second. It's really kind of weird. Like they can see on YouTube when there's peak interest and when their audience loses interest. And I think, you know, like to talk a little bit about the, what we're working on for you, it's if you're a creator or you're a business and you want to be engaging with your audience, you have to start with knowing who they are and what environments they're playing on. It's like, if you have an Instagram following, you have to be mindful of like, okay, what are these people following me on Instagram for? What are they hoping to see? You know, like, why are they following me? And make sure that you're serving that to them.
Mm-hmm. Could not be more true. Right. Because then you're almost wasting your time creating content that might not be picked up the right way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think a lot of marketers make the mistake of just doing it to do it, you know, and they want to check the box of, oh, we need an Instagram, so we're just going to put Instagram content up. And they, you know, either repurpose advertisements or they, you know, they shoot something that's kind of irrelevant and they never get a following. They're not engaging with the community the right way. And it's because they're not serving their audience.
Right. It's so true. Thank you for that input. Great insight for our audience. So I also kind of want to discuss, because you work on both ends of it. You work with the companies and the brands. So also explain to me, because I remember when we first chatted too, like what your definition of branding actually is. Because I know you were saying like if a company hires you, you want to get them brand recognition, right? So can you break down a little bit of what it's like to work with you? So give, like, let's say we're using Next On Scene as an example for our audience.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's any kind of brand. The first thing that we talk about is, okay, you know, who's your audience base? Who are you looking to reach? And what are you looking to say or provide to them? So I think for someone like you, you know, for Next On Scene, your goal is to reach people who are interested in learning about entrepreneurs or becoming an entrepreneur or, you know, like maybe investors as well who are looking to understand like kind of up and coming businesses and figure out who might be worth partnering with and collaborating with. So, you know, what I would do with you is kind of figure out, okay, who are the influencers in the space? You know, whether they're people local to New England who have a big following, who are known for already being an investor, being a well-known entrepreneur, and kind of work with them to figure out, you know, how to promote Next on Scene in an organic way and how to get them talking about it so that your messaging is going out to their audience in an authentic way. Now, you're a media company, you know, so that's
right.
There's absolutely a space for that, but you're also a platform in yourself, and so it's a little bit, it gets to be a little bit meta, but that doesn't mean that it's not possible. But to get back to what you're saying, you know, like, I think there's a great, you know, there's a great amount of value for businesses that have, like, a tangible product. Like, for example, there's one that's just popped into my head. It's called Quip. It's a toothbrush company. And they have this, like, very cool millennial-esque electronic toothbrush. And it's rose gold. And they have a few other colors, too.
That's pretty cool.
I think, right. And so, you know, for them, it's an awareness play. There are so many toothbrushes out there. There's so many, you know, like, types of toothbrushes. But, like, this persuaded me, because the second I found out about Quip, like, I thought about it for months and months and months, and I finally ordered one at one point because it just made such an impression, and it's because it was kind of put in front of me in a situation where I was exposed to it, you know? So it's like, if you're a brand like that and you reach out to a bunch of influencers with a ton of followers in your target demographic, they're all like, whoa, I can get a rose gold toothbrush, you know? Then all of a sudden you're driving sales.
Very good point. So I think this is my other follow-up question to you, being in this space from the other side. Is it better to work with micro-influencers or like a Kim Kardashian?
So it all comes down to the objective and the budget, obviously.
Right.
But I think that the kind of standard recommendation, if you can afford it, is to do a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, You get much more reach when you work with the bigger stars. I mean, I would say that Kim Kardashian is kind of in another camp.
Good point.
people that are a little bit smaller than Kim Kardashian, and then the micro influencers. You know, if you're a small business and you're very focused on driving direct sales, then the micro influencers tend to be a little bit more efficient because the fees aren't as high and they tend to have higher engagement. So, you know, they have fewer followers, but they move more of those followers kind of from a percentage standpoint.
Totally. Absolutely makes sense. And the ones that have the bigger amounts of traffic, just because you've been in that space, what is the average, like, I mean, obviously it really caters to who you're working with, but average, like, ROI, like, let's say that you paid like a YouTube star that had 1 million hits, right, on one video. What on average usually mm-hmm. is the turnover, like, in terms of sales generated? Do you know?
So what's interesting is that, and this is, again, like, kind of part of why I started my business, is that when it comes to this world, I don't think there's a normal, you know?
Good point.
Like, it ranges so drastically from, you know, whether it's influencer to influencer, to you could have one influencer working with two different brands, and the way that the project comes together, like, the results could be completely different. You know, there's so many factors that have to happen that, you know, when you're managing expectations on the front end, there's a baseline that you have to understand that says, okay, if I'm going to work with someone who has this level of followers, you know, I'm going to expect to get, you know, X number of views, X number of engagements, like, get in front of this baseline number of people. And then if you really do a good job, like, the effect improves over and over again from there, you know?
Totally. And I mean, that's when they have to come to Meredith and hire Meredith to do all of these things. But so would you suggest also, I mean, I think personally from my experience, like, if you're going to go in and make this investment, you should show up more than one time, right? Do you agree with that? Because
yeah.
I feel like repetitive,
yeah.
like, being repetitive is so key. Being a one-off, people forget you very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. So, okay, so cool. So what was your becoming Next on Scene moment that you were like, wow, I am totally in this right field of business. The results I've seen for this one client, it has really made my day.
I think it's not so much a result-based thing. It was more of, you know, I had just gotten back to Boston, you know, from my hometown, and I just started to realize that there's not as much connectivity to New York and LA as I kind of thought there might be out here. And I think that I just noticed a gap, and I noticed and had conversations with people who felt like that was another world and they didn't have it accessible to them. And I think there are Boston businesses that I wanted to be able to help that are a little bit smaller than I might have been able to help from an agency standpoint, you know, but there's still a ton of value and reward in working with smaller creators and smaller businesses. And also, I kind of had this unique ability because of my background and my relationships where I can still stay tight with the bigger companies, and I'm working in a capacity where I can help my partners, you know, find opportunities with big budgets. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds.
Totally. I love it. And I really think you have found that niche market of like really expanding to broader places than just staying local, which I think is awesome.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too is that I really wanted to be able to work with brands that really wanted to create these moments and do these campaigns and activate. And I didn't want, you know, there's a lot of spin and a lot of talk in some of the larger accounts. And, you know, it takes mountains and sometimes years for a campaign to come to life. And I think that this opportunity allows me to work, you know, really fast and be able to make things happen. So one of my favorite campaigns was actually one of the first ones that I got to see completely through, from personally coming up with the idea to bringing it to the influencer and getting their sign off, and then having them actually execute it and being in charge of executing the whole thing. And that was a partnership with a well-known donut company that actually is going away from the sales of donuts, so you can guess what that is. And basically, we wanted to promote how fast their mobile app worked, and we tried to think about ways of like, okay, how do you show in content how quickly and effectively an app works? And we came up with this idea to do kind of like a relay race around New York City on Snapchat, because the creator that we worked with was one of the biggest Snapchat creators at the time. And we came up with this like 12 donuts before noon at 12 different shops.
That's so cool.
It was awesome. It was so much fun. I did the relay race myself. Like my colleague and I actually like tried to see how much we could fit in before 12. So during the test runs, we went to the top of the Empire State Building, and we went to the Statue of Liberty one day, but we kind of mapped it all out so that when the influencer did it in real time and documented it in real time on Snapchat, it ran like a well-oiled machine. And that was a blast, and his audience was loving it and following along, and, you know, everyone was excited because it was just such a fun and creative idea.
So awesome. So first of all, what even goes to the creative, like, piece behind that? Like, how did you guys think about that plan?
So it all starts with the objective and the challenge, right?
Right.
So, you know, like I mentioned, it was, you know, figuring out, okay, how do you show how quickly you can go from ordering to receiving the product, you know? And so if you're doing it in real time on Snapchat, then you're able to see timestamps and you're able to see
good point
kind of the moves throughout the city.
Mm-hmm. So cool. Love it. And donuts, was it relatable to the influencer, or was that just a fun thing that you came up with?
Totally, no. That influencer had a prior relationship with the brand as well.
That's awesome.
You know, there's definitely the established relatability.
No, so cool. I love that. So different. So fun. All right. So awesome. But so Meredith, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think that what's important to remember and what's really cool from a process standpoint is that you can do the first steps, you know, as the brand or in partnership with your agency, and you want to come up with kind of the very loose structure and the loose idea for what it is. But then to really make an effective influencer partnership, you want to make sure that the influencer is involved. So you come to them with the idea and you say, you know, hey, how would you tailor this for your audience? And how would you make it relatable and so that they love it? Because the influencers do the best work when they have the creative freedom to really play around with it.
It's a really good point. Really good point. So what is next for Meredith? Like, what kind of people do you represent right now? What are you looking to? Who are you looking to connect with?
So I'm working with a wide variety of brands and content creators and vendors. And, you know, I'm kind of like the spoke in the middle, connecting them all together. So, you know, if you're a brand and you're looking to play around in this space, then I'm happy to connect you with either the right vendor partner or the right influencers direct to help bring that to life. And if you're a creator and you're looking to find more opportunities, you know, it's important to get on my radar so that when they come along, then I can have you top of mind. And for the vendors, the same thing. If you're just finding that you have a great solution, but you're not getting attention, then, you know, I can kind of help and find those opportunities that are going to make the most sense for you.
Love it. So awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. I want to play some game time. Oh, wait. Also, before we get into game time, tell everybody how they can follow you on social media and your website.
Yeah, for sure. So my website is www.bostonboosters.com. And my Instagram is @BostonBoosters. And if you go, you'll see that I posted today all of the pumpkin things that I bought this season, because I cannot go into a grocery store and not buy all of the pumpkin things.
I'm loving it.
So that's the kind of digital content that you can expect. But, you know, I also post about the clients that I'm working with and the creators that I'm working with. And so it's a fun place to follow along.
Loving it. Thank you for sharing. Okay, cool. Now, are you ready for some game time?
You bet.
Okay, cool. There's no limit for how fast you have to answer. This is just a fun way for our audience to get to know you. So, what is Meredith's favorite TV guilty pleasure?
So, I have no shame when it comes to my TV shows, but this year I started watching the Netflix show Selling Sunset.
Never heard of it. What is it about?
All right. So, here's what's funny is that I started it. Oh, by the way, I should preface this with saying that I'm really not a reality TV person. Like, I've never kind of gotten into it. Like, I liked American Idol in the first season, but beyond that, like, I've never been super drawn to reality TV. So I saw Selling Sunset come up as a recommended show on Netflix, and I thought that it was a mockumentary. So I started watching it, and for the first 20 minutes of the first episode, I thought it was a brilliant mockumentary, and then I realized that those people are real.
So wait, first of all, we have to back up a little bit. What is a mockumentary?
It's like The Office. So it's a scripted sitcom that is filmed in the style of being a documentary.
Oh my God, I love it. I've never heard that phrase in my life. So thank you for sharing that.
Oh, really?
Never. No.
Yeah. So cool. So for anyone who hasn't heard of the show yet, it's basically, it follows a group of real estate agents in Hollywood, and there's just a ton of drama, a ton of catfights, and then all of a sudden, one of the woman just announces that she's married to one of the stars of This Is Us.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and so I thought all of that was fake until 20 minutes into the first episode, and I was laughing so hard, and then I realized it was real, and I liked it so much that I kept watching it, but I kind of still wish that it was a sitcom.
That's hysterical. So you all along don't like reality shows, but this ended up being a reality show.
Yep.
That's hysterical. Okay, what is the name of it again? I'm totally going to check it out.
It's called Selling Sunset.
Selling Sunset. Okay, cool. Only because I'm so into the real estate world. Like, I love Million Dollar Listing and all that stuff, so I'm definitely going to explore that. And to anybody that's listening.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. So funny. Okay, what is Meredith's favorite food?
My favorite food is probably burrito bowl.
From?
Oh, man. Anywhere. I just, you know, I like not picking one thing. Like, I hate when I'm eating something that's one flavor. So it doesn't even matter where. It's just I love the blend of all of the different foods that you can fit into a burrito bowl.
I'm loving it. Right, because then you're not limited. It's almost unlimited, because in a wrap, you're only limited to what can fit in the wrap, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's like you think about pizza. I cannot bring myself to eat cheese pizza anymore. Like, it used to be my favorite, but now it just is so bland to me that I just feel like it's not even worth it anymore.
You're so funny. On to bigger and better things, right? So funny.
No, barbecue chicken pizza, that's a different story.
I love barbecue chicken. And buffalo chicken pizza is pretty good, too, I gotta say.
Oh, so good.
Love it. Okay. What is your favorite travel destination you've been to thus far?
I love going back to Los Angeles, and I guess that might be kind of a cheap answer because I used to live there, but I feel like if you think about a favorite, you know, it's like there's never, you never run out of things to do, and if you do, there's so many good places there to eat, to hang out, to, you know, like be outside, and if that wasn't enough, you know, I love spending time with my peeps out there and catching up with old friends. And so it's kind of like, doesn't get better.
I love it. That's so nice. Okay. Where is a place on your bucket list that you haven't been to yet that you want to go to?
I think I would say Australia.
Love, love, want to go to Australia too. It's just far, so far.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's on my bucket list. I'm kind of holding out just in case someone invents a quicker way to get there.
We'll just have to fly how do they pronounce that flight? It's like Emirates, right? Where you get the beds and everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Like, that's like real VIP traveling there. All right. If you could wear one outfit for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
I think it would probably be... Well, all right, you got to tell me, are people going to judge me for my outfit? Like, do I have to look good or what?
You can say whatever you want. I've heard a little bit of everything, to be honest with you.
Well, all right. So if I had to wear one outfit for the rest of my life, yeah, it would definitely be sweatpants and a t-shirt.
Like, loving
there's
it.
There's just no getting out of it.
Loving
I'd
it.
I try to make it a cute t-shirt, you know, but it's like I would not be happy if I had to wear jeans for the rest of my life.
I get that. I totally get that because you feel confined, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And what kind? Okay, so what kind of shoes would you wear?
Oh, man. Good question. Probably sneakers.
Yeah. Comfortable.
The rest of my life, you know, anything else. I don't know how you do it. Maybe
I love that. That's awesome.
I got a pair of rose gold Sperry's off of an Instagram ad. So
you are a rose gold girl, Meredith. I'm loving it.
I do love rose gold.
Yeah. God, so right? You'll have to bring those out. You'll have to bring those out. A little bit of, you know, glitter with your outfit, a little bit of shine. Loving it.
Yeah. Do you like that I've referenced rose gold and pumpkin spice in this podcast?
Oh my God, I'm loving it. Loving those things too. So it's totally, I'm aligned with you, girlfriend. Loving it. Okay, if you won $1 million tomorrow, last question, what would be the first three things you would do with it and why?
Well, all right. Well, then if it's going to be three things, then I'll have to be practical with two of them and then I'll have fun with the third one. Okay?
No judgment here, okay? I've heard everything too, so.
So first thing would be the most boring answer, which is pay off debt and mortgages and all that fun stuff. For
that's
my family
smart.
And myself.
That's smart. Loving it.
That
okay.
Would just be like, you know, baseline. Mm-hmm. And then actually I'll do second. Oh, you said third. All right. Second thing is I think I would go on like Kickstarter or Indiegogo and browse through for like some of those projects that are about to come to a close. And you know that the producer is about to have to like pay in order to get their funding. Like they'd have to pull it from their own bank account. And I think I'd just find cool projects or projects that seem like a good idea and just all of a sudden drop like $10,000.
I love that. That's like, awesome.
Oh my God. What?
That's freaking awesome. I have not heard that yet, by the way. I love that.
Yeah, you know, it seems like a fun way to give back.
It is. And what would be the what would be the last thing?
Two. The money would be gone.
You're not going to get yourself a nice vacation, a new location, like buy a new house, none of that, buy a new wardrobe.
Nah, I think the money would disappear very quickly.
You're so funny.
$10 million, you know, maybe, but it would be Yeah, it would be pretty quick.
Yeah, good point. It is a good point. It does go faster than you think. Well, I think you're awesome. You're so inspiring. Tell everybody again how they can follow you on social media, your website, and yeah, that would be great.
Thank you. And this has been awesome too. I'm glad that we connected and that I got to come on the podcast.
So happy to have you.
You can find me at www.bostonboosters.com or on Instagram at Boston Boosters.
Loving it. All right, everybody. Definitely you need to check out Meredith and Boston Boosters. She's doing some amazing stuff for businesses, brands, creatives, a little bit of everybody. You're looking for to connect with the right vendor for something. She's got you covered, right?
You got it.
Awesome. Well, everybody, thank you again so much for tuning in to Becoming Next on Scene. Like we said, follow Meredith at Boston Boosters on social media and at her website. Check her out and stay tuned for who's next on Scene.
The ups, the downs, and all the in-between. What it takes to become next on scene. Are you next? Follow us at Next on Scene.